Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to our City Council meeting for February the 5th, 2013. I currently have 7:07 p.m. I'd like to start. And I don't see that anyone has signed up for public comments. I'm calling the meeting to order. And I'd like an approval of tonight's agenda. Someone would like to approve that?
I move that we approve the agenda subject to moving item number 4 after item number 9.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes. Okay, and we also need to have our invocation and pledge, and so Council Member Augustus is going to lead us in invocation, followed by Council Member Martinez, who will lead us in the pledge.
Dearly Father, we're grateful to you gather tonight as friends, leaders, and citizens of Cedar Hills. We ask thee that thou please bless us, that we'll be able to conduct the business of the city, that we'll be able to open our hearts and our minds, and do what's best for those around us, for our citizens. We're thankful for the great place in which we are able to live, and many blessings that we have to say in the news script.
Please stand and repeat the pledge, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. We have slightly amended our agenda tonight and would like to move directly to an item to recognize one of our Cedar Hills residents. And this is part of our ongoing program, which is called Cedar Hills Champions. And what we do is we recognize a Cedar Hills person, man, woman, child, that has done something really significant in their life, and we want to honor that. And so some of the people that are already on our plaque, it's called Cedar Hills Champions Making a Difference. And so Ariel Martin was our first person. If you remember, she was going to compete in the Olympics. She was injured shortly before that. She doesn't live in Cedar Hills right now, but she always claims Cedar Hills as her home, and so a terrific young lady. Also, Herb Wilkinson, who is one of our fantastic elder gentlemen, and so he played in 1945, I think it was, national championship basketball for the University of Utah, scored the winning basket to help them win. We also had a group of men and women that were honored recently for a scouting award called the Silver Beaver, very significant award. And tonight's award goes to Miss Paige Osmond, and we want to talk about that a little bit. So tonight we're going to be honoring Paige Osmond, and tomorrow will be forever called Paige Osmond Day in the City of Cedar Hills. How cool is that?
I just like the little brother's reaction.
So, David, I think you're presenting on this. And so if you'd like to present, and then I will read the resolution.
I didn't know, but I will.
Okay.
Let me just pull it up real quick.
So to give you a little bit of background about Paige, she has been dancing, and if I'm wrong, Paige, just shout out, tell me. She's been dancing since she was 3, and she was in New York last year for a dance competition and decided to try out for the Nutcracker, Radio City's the Nutcracker. And so she auditioned while she was there, and later received the call that she received the lead role of Clara for all of the performances that were going to take place in Nashville, Tennessee. So she flew out to South Carolina, spent a week there learning the choreography, and then went to Tennessee and had another week of training, and then spent the next 5 weeks performing in about 38 performances. So it was a pretty big deal because she got the lead role. I'm sure there were many, many people who were auditioning for that, and it's great that she was able to receive it. So our resolution says, a resolution recognizing Paige Osmond as a Cedar Hills champion for her outstanding commitment to excellence and her dedication to the art of dancing. Whereas in August 2012, Paige Osmond's dream of performing with the Radio City Rockettes came to fruition when she landed the part of Clara in their production. And whereas the city of Cedar Hill wishes to fully recognize the dedication and effort that Paige Osmond has given in pursuit of her dreams by training as a dancer since she was 3 years old. And whereas Paige Osmond exemplifies the traits, abilities, and drive that inspire others in our community to pursue their own personal goals and dreams. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the City Council of the City of Cedar Hills, Utah, and on behalf of the residents, hereby proclaims that February 6, 2013, be recognized as Paige Osmond Day. With this, the City of Cedar Hills wishes to recognize and sincerely thank Paige Osmond for her dedication and inspiration that she has provided to our community. So at this time, I think it would be great to give Paige a round of applause.
Council, go ahead.
So I move that we approve Resolution 25-2013A, a resolution recognizing Paige Osmond as the Cedar Hills champion and for her outstanding commitment to excellence and her dedication to the art of dancing.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion unanimously passes. Paige, would you mind coming up to the podium? I'd like to ask you a few questions if that's okay. First of all, we're so proud of you, and that's such an accomplishment. What was it like doing this at such a young age? And tell us a little bit about your time back in Nashville.
It was fun, but it was a little bit scary at first, but then I got used to it.
What was the most challenging part of doing all the performances? What did you find the most thrilling? What was the most challenging?
Getting the courage to go up every night.
Oh, gosh. Well, we are so proud of you. Again, tomorrow will forever be known as Paige Osmond Day 2013. So we're really proud of you. Would you mind if we had some pictures taken?
If it's not official, I'm pretty sure on your day that your whole family has to wait in kind of bed.
I like that idea. Healthy.
Any further discussion? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes are accepted. Very good. Thank you. City reports and business. Mr. Bunker, your first.
One of the things that we're working on as staff is looking into changes to the healthcare policies that Obamacare is going to take effect next January. So we've been working on that. We'll have an update for council on that. I don't have anything else.
Okay. Thank you. Starting from my left, Mrs. Reese.
We issued a press release on Paige Austin. That was the press release from the last meeting.
That's it. Mr. Jackman.
As some of you might be aware, changes in the Scott County Dispatch has kind of started a little bit of a stir around public safety and what people are going to do. And as a result, I believe from that, the Lone Peak Public Safety District Police Chief has been dying to talk with us to try to get us to join with them. David Bunker and I met with him since we last met to discuss what that might be. And to be fair, we went the other way as well. We met with Chief Garcia from American Forest Fire Department to kind of see what they had as well. And we'll probably talk more about that in the future. Also, I met with someone from the Murdoch Canal, their public relations group. As you know, they covered the canal with a big pipe, and after covering the canal, they're in the process of putting a trail across the whole thing. And as that is reaching completion, they're starting to organize some events around that. There are two specific events that are going to be happening. The first one is to commemorate the enclosure, and that event's probably going to occur in April. It will have a lot of dignitaries and other people there. And then probably about a month or two later, they want to have another event that focuses on the trail. And that will be a much more community-oriented event that each community will put together. And so over the next few months, I'll probably be working with them to coordinate that, and we'll coordinate it with our recreation department and all these other things, because I think there's a lot of really nice things that we can do as part of that celebration of Advent Trail, which will be a huge asset to our city.
Thank you. Anything else?
That's it.
Mrs. Martinez.
All right, so Junior Jazz is about halfway done, and they had their meet the jazz player night. They combined with Eagle Mountain, Lehigh, PG, and ourselves at Lehigh High School. I don't recall the player. Who was it?
Annis
Cantor. I'm not a big jazz. Anyways, and then Family Festival, if you might have seen that our date for the festival got changed a week up because of some conflict with Orem moving their date. So the carnival company Midway West could no longer do our carnival. They do Orem. However, they have promised us the Ferris wheel this year. So we'll continue with getting information on that and feedback on last year's Family Festival to Midway West. Top soccer registration starts up soon. They're working on T-ball. They got an okay by the LDS church next to Mesquite Park to use their grass that's on Cottonwood, so they're excited about that. Let's see here. Golf. So you guys might have seen that Golf is updating their software. And so what happened is the software company didn't renew with us, and so we have new software that's being added. And so I think Waze has been working this week to get the new software up. The cart, we approved new carts, and so they picked up 32 old carts, and then the 1st of March they'll pick up the rest, and all the new carts will be delivered. And then once the snow melts, they'll probably give the course a day or two to dry out, and they'll start up. So it's kind of a watch for the next month. As for events, Natalie went to the Thanksgiving Point Expo, and at that expo she got 6 to 7 bookings, and they have 2 more expos coming up for the Vista Room. YCC started to stuff eggs today for the Easter egg hunt, and we also have 2 youth groups that are volunteering to help the eggs because it literally takes a whole month. And then lastly, I'm working with Mayor Gigi on a new program to kind of go along with our family festival that mimics Pleasant Grove, which is done by, it's community ran by volunteers. And so we're looking at chairs and subcommittees to run just a few things this year, and then we'll grow it further where, like Pleasant Grove has like 18 subcommittees for their festival, and it's 100% community ran, which will also help us in the long run on our budget, because currently right now it literally takes every single staff member that whole entire week plus leading up to it to put our family festival together. I appreciate it, but it is a lot of work on our staff. So trying to look at ways to improve that. And so if you have somebody that you think would be really great, one of the things that we've done in the past is we've just put in the newsletter that we're looking for volunteers to volunteer at our family festival. And one of the things in speaking with Pleasant Grove is that they actually don't do it that way. They have nominations where somebody says, oh, so-and-so would be great, and they nominate that person, and then we go out and seek them. And so if you know somebody in your neighborhood that maybe has a talent or you thought would be really great at helping us in Family Festival, whether it's like at the race or they have vendors, vending experience or volunteers or just even the parade, I mean, you don't have to have, I'm not saying you don't have to have skills, but you don't have to have a specialized talent, I guess I should say, to let me know, and we will put them on that list and contact them for either subcommittee commission, and I think it's going to be something fantastic.
I agree. I will be having lots of conversations regarding our options with the grill in order to present more information to you guys, and so expect that, but also preparing for the day-long training activity for executive staff and council and mayor. So Mr. Bunker and I will discuss that a lot, and we'll get back to you shortly. Mr. Augustus.
Okay, a couple of things. I attended the last North Point Solid Waste meeting. It took me longer to drive down there than the meeting actually lasted. It was quick. There was one item. It was done. So not a lot to report there. And then Planning Commission was held last month. I wasn't able to attend because I was out of town. So I don't have anything to report there.
Okay. Mr. Zappala.
So I was sick last week and unable to attend the Animal Services meeting, but I'll be getting in contact with them to find out flesh. And then my other activities have been working with these students who tonight asked for our city. We had a very productive meeting with David and Charlotte and Dax. And they are really energized, wanting to really knock this out of the park for us. So we've got a nice design, and I think it's going to be good for them to see. And then our group that's building a volunteer library app is well underway as well. And we'll see what comes.
Thank you very much. Anything else?
Nope.
Okay, very good. Let's move on to scheduled items. Item number 10, review action item on an ordinance amending Title 5, Chapter 1, Article C-5 regarding Cattery. Let's see. Looks like Chandler is presenting on this. Mr. Goodwin.
So we took the proposed changes from the last council meeting and applied
Really, the changes came down to major changes was that we limited the maximum number. There's critical language that allowed for maximum number of cats. There's six cats over the age of 6 months, and only one litter from those cats may be born in the cattery, and the owner may have up to 3 personal cats, which are not included in the maximum number of boarded cats. So we wanted to clear up that language because there was kind of some vague that would lead to hard time in enforcing law. And also, we cleaned up some of the redundancies. There are some dual definitions. We just kind of trimmed down the language a little bit. But that is the major change. So, if you have any questions, I'd love to hear.
Council, I'm sure.
I have one recommendation, which is to strike section 1D3, because it is a repeat of section 1D2, which is every cat and cattery over 4 months of age and have a pair of rabies vaccination. And I believe that's what that previous sentence says prior to section.
Where's this?
It will be
341 to do the reference.
Right up above.
1B2 on the last line.
Item number 11, review action item on approval of a contract with a public relations firm to assist the city with a branding campaign. Mr. Bumper.
Mayor and Council, thank you. I'll talk loud. So this was on our agenda from the last meeting, and there were a few questions that the council had. One was regarding the contract itself and having the contract reflect what was actually in the proposal. I sent that contract out to the council. Did everybody have that? It's not in your packet here, but it is. I did send it to you last Friday. So that, in reviewing that, we tried to tighten up the language of the contract to reflect what was in the proposal, and I think it really does capture that. One of the other issues was how, a proposal for ways which we can fund this item. So out of our current budget, there's three line items, 1040-330 professional technical, we take 12,000.
So, really quick, can you just explain, I don't have the budget with me, I'm not sure what that means. What is 1040?
That 1040 is the general,
1040 what?
1040-330, that's in our general mayor and council professional tax. And in that item, we already had allocated some of those funds for PR.
How much?
I believe that was $10,000. So we already had money budgeted for PR.
That much though?
$12,000. Ten was for the PR.
Okay.
And I don't have that with me. Maybe pull that up, Chandler.
So where does the other 2,000 gonna? Because if we only have 10,000 budget for PR, where does the other 2,000 come from?
I think the fund itself was more. I think 10,000 was for the PR. The other professional technical in that account. So it would just be taken out of professional technical. I think the total account for that was, and Chandler can look this. The fund itself was higher than that. I just don't know. $7,500-$7,600, which is advertising for golf events, and then $5,173,330, which is also professional technical account.
And what's that category?
And that one is out of the enterprise fund, water, sewer, I believe, professional technical.
Why?
Because, in my opinion, it affects every department. This encompasses everything in the whole city.
Huh.
And so,
okay.
Taking part of it out of that.
So the 1040-330 originally had $25,000 allocated to it. You're saying that that's what's left. It just says general government.
Can you speak into my please?
Oh, sorry. I'm just looking at the budget. So under general government expenditures, 10-40-330 professional technical, we had allocated $25,000 for that line item. You're saying there's about $10,000 left.
Ten was for PR.
Okay. So it wasn't detailed like that on the budget.
Right.
Okay.
So 25 out of that, and we would use 12.
David? Sir, what was your question about budget?
I think Jenny answered the first part. The second part is 5173330.
Professional technical, but in the water expenditures.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what normally would have that have been used for? Professional technical water.
A lot of times when we have studies or reports or engineering services to do in that account. So that's typically what comes out of that.
And what happens if we need those this year?
If we need those this year, what are we going to do? We would have to come back to the council and either reallocate those funds or ask for a budget.
But you could transfer funds within the water fund, so there were higher revenues in another one, you would have to come back to the council for a budget amendment on that.
If the fund itself is still solvent and
not just the fun, but just even the categories within it, which your example doesn't have the categories broken out, but it's not just the entire water fund has to balance, but each group within the water fund need a balance. So we may have to adjust between them or between the funds.
I thought Eric was saying today that within departments, it didn't have to come to the council if it was transferred within departments.
Yeah, that's a subgroup. That's not the entire fund.
Okay.
So if it's within that group, yeah, it does not have to.
Okay.
Mr. Booker, when we did our last vision study, out of what fund did that money come in order to take care of that?
I believe that was a professional
decision survey.
Decision 2010.
It had its own.
Yeah.
Well, that's right. It did have its own line item,
and it was eliminated.
And that was $20,000.
$10,000, I believe.
$10,000, yeah.
I thought it was $12,000.
Was it $12,000?
I thought it was $12,000 when we eliminated it.
And less than $20,000.
Yeah.
Okay. Council, any questions?
So
we have some people here that I think may be able to answer some of your questions directly. We have two members from the PR group, plus if you want to ask them questions, if you don't, that's fine. But you're welcome to talk amongst yourselves.
So what are the questions also? So this how we would fund it, and then also there was a question relating to the contract itself and making sure that it matched the proposal. And then I think the other question that the council had was regarding exactly what does this do for us? Is it logo? Is it just a logo, or is it more than that? And you know, honestly, it is more than that. And I included an article about branding in the packet for you guys to read. Some principles of branding. You know, Mary Kay and Chris, who are with Radiate, they can definitely answer more questions as it relates to that. But
the revised contract is more clear on what the deliverables are, and that it's not just the logo, but that there are other aspects.
If you have questions regarding branding as a whole and how that helps the city of Cedar Hills, where we go with that, how it affects economic development, which is a real key component, I think, in branding, and how it helps us move our city forward. You know, if you have any questions with regards to that, I think Chris and Mary Kay are great for that.
Just a point from my perspective, which is that however you go on this is fine. I do think this is entirely about economic development. I don't think it's about our residential area. And so our residential area is not completely built out, but to a great extent it is. And that's doing fine. Our commercial zone is starting to build out, and it is important that is done well. And so I think that, you know, the branding and the advertising we're doing this year on the assets that the city has, that's all about economic development now and in the future. And so I do think it's important. Feel free to ask questions. It's your time.
So can I start with a simple question?
Yeah.
Do we need a new logo?
I don't think this is all about the logo. I think
that's my question.
Yeah.
Do we need a new logo?
I don't know if we do or not.
I'm just curious what the rest of the council thinks.
I think that I would like to have a committee that's involved in helping us make those decisions, because we're not the only stakeholders in the city. We have residents who should be involved. We have other existing commercial business owners who should be involved. We have, obviously a large LDS population here. We have state presidencies and such who are involved in other aspects of the city that should be involved. And so I don't know if we have an answer for that right now. Maybe it's yes, maybe it's no. Maybe it's we keep our existing logo or just tweak it a little. I don't know. I think we need to have more input from more stakeholders to this.
My
answer to that is yes. What, can you speak more?
I think the answer to that is yes. I think our current logo does not communicate our brand very well. I don't know that we know what our brand is yet, but looking at it, it just has trees. I don't think that communicates the brand effectively. And I don't think we have a tagline, which also comes with the branding effort to really communicate what our message is very succinctly.
So my opinion is I don't think we need a logo per se, but what we're getting is more branding, and I do think we need better branding. I think we need a better sense of identity, which are the other deliverables. If we walk away from this, and retain the same logo, but have a better sense of branding and a better sense of identity, then I think we're just as successful.
I think from my perspective, I don't have questions. I mean, I sat through the presentation anyway, but a lot of the feedback that I've been talking to residents and going through the articles that you gave us and some other ones as well, I think Gary had given us one earlier, others as well, but like Scott just said, is talking to a lot of people outside of Arkansas County, they don't even know where Cedar Hills is, and that's a big problem for us. Just from a location standpoint, a lot of residents don't know where we are. And like Dan just said, we don't really have a brand image. And the one takeaway that I really got from all of those documents that Gary provided to us and that you provided to us is that every city has an identity. It may not be the identity you want. And so that's part of our branding process, is to help direct that identity and figure out who we are and then make that, be more successful with getting that out there instead of having other people come up with our identity for us. So in my eyes, especially with this coming from existing funds, some of those that were previously going to be used for PR and marketing, I know some of it includes a survey, which we were wanting to do this year anyway, and of course when that got cut from the budget, it makes complete sense to move forward with this, so that way, like Gary, from an economic development perspective, we can see some significant growth in that area.
So I wasn't here at the last council meeting, I was out of town, but I did go back and listen to the audio from the last meeting, so if I'm repeating anything you guys have talked about, maybe that I didn't catch, please feel free to correct me. With this rebranding, though, it's not an automatic, we go through the rebranding and voila, everything's taken care of for us. I mean, there is still a lot of work to do on our part. So have we assessed what kind of costs we're looking at with that? What kind of staff time we're looking at that would be involved with that? The cost that we've got to go through if we do new logos, we've got to pull logos off stores. We've got letterhead marketing materials. I mean, there's a whole load of stuff that's going to have to be changed. So what additional costs and what is staff going to do? Because we're constantly being told the staff does not have a spare minute to do anything else, but now we're going to task them to go out and rebrand our city. And I just don't see how we're going to pull that off right now.
That, I think Councilmember Martinez brought that exact point up in the last meeting. And that should be on the audit. And that's a valid concern, absolutely. How we figure out how staff will integrate that, how much it's going to cost. I know Chandler started to put together that, you know, the whole parameter of that. What's it going to take? You know, every city building, every truck, every, you know, all of our business cards. Some of those things we've been holding off doing anything with. We've used temporary business cards for a while. We've held off ordering new.
Well, just in case. Yeah, and a couple months ago, I mean, I actually started with you and Gretchen to go through our business cards. I actually spent a couple of weeks putting together designs and putting together options, and then got told that don't do it. So,
I think, you know, what we need to do is come up with a common vision, a common, you know, identity, what council would like to promote. We have a lot of advertising to do in the future, and right now I think other people, you know, they're making assumptions about the area. We're not driving our image. Other people are, you know, they've got who Cedar Hills is in there, or they don't even know who Cedar Hills is. And so this process would help us figure out who that is, and then help us drive it.
So that it will help us drive it. One of the deliverables is a plan of sorts saying, here are the types of marketing things that we can do. We can spend money. We can either do it in-house by paying our employees, or we can outsource it and pay another firm to do some of that PR for us.
You know, I think that's probably a good question.
That's great. And that's, I think it goes along the line is, yeah, that's not the final answer. And that's why, you know, we have budgeted some PR in these various items, but a lot of that budget is I think we're going to spend on the next phase, which probably needs to happen shortly after we're done here, which is we have to get that identity and that image out.
But what I'm seeing from this, though, is that we're taking all of those funds and spending it on this rebranding, and then we're not going to have the funds.
Which I have a problem with. And so I have a lot of, I have some issues when we start talking about the budget, where things are going to come from. I have some concerns about that. But as far as what it is that they're going to do and how we can benefit that, I'm actually pretty satisfied with that, provided we can agree on where it's going to come from, so that we don't completely deplete our funds and then walk away saying, well, I guess we're going to wait till next year to get it out because we don't have any money left.
Well, with this process from reading the proposal, it's going to be about a three-month process, which puts us right into the budget for 2014 anyway. So I think in our budget talks, we need to take all that into consideration. I think it's good that Chandler's trying to put that together right now. You know, what things we need to look at, what changes will be required, and, you know, if it's going to take the staff time writing stuff on the website, it would really be a big effect on residents or on the client because it's the same template, basically, so it's definitely just WordPress still.
I'm going to bounce that off to Radiate.
Yeah, just to answer that question, I would say that at the end, whatever ends up with the information that we gather and we come back and we say, this is the recommendation based on all these parts, this is what the community loves, this is what you love, this is it, here's how it should be implemented, and here's your brand guidelines. Just in the nature of creating that list, it will simplify your process of having to create a budget around it. And now you actually have a list, like, okay, we have to do street funding. We have to, you know, here, okay. And we'll give you our recommendation on prioritizing that. Of course, you know, you guys do it the way you want. But it's that next step for handing it to somebody and saying, how much will this cost? You know, certainly outside people like ourselves or lots of other folks can give you this on external resources, doing some of those pieces, but, you know, ultimately it's your list.
So I did some research into this. Provo City, about 2 years ago, went through a rebranding. Initially, I think they had budgeted around $75,000 to go through their rebranding. When they were done with it, they spent $257,000 or something like that.
We'll take that.
So that's a considerable chunk of change. If they're only planning on spending X and they quadrupled what they were planning, if we budget and spend $18,000, that means we've got to come up with another, $90,000.
Over what period of time? Was that within 1 year?
Oh, yeah. It was well within a year.
But we don't know what discussions went into that in terms of why they decided to quadruple their budget. And so it's guessing on our part to say that ours would quadruple just because theirs didn't.
Right. But my point is getting at is that they redid street signs, they redid signs throughout the city, they put up new park signs, they rebranded their trucks. I mean, they went through all of these things, and unless we sit down and go through all of those costs and figure out what is it going to cost to rebrand all of our public works trucks, because they're visible within our city, how much is it going to take to redo all of our signs throughout the city with a new logo? And those are expensive costs that we don't know.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a legitimate point in terms of how to pay for this. I think the government is all about priorities. And so I think this should be a priority and we should figure out how to do it. I mean, if Cedar Hills is going to be a city, we need to act like a city. And our commercial zone, I think, is going to grow over the next year and a half or so tremendously. And so this is something that commercial businesses want to have some input on, and this is something that they want. In order for a company to come and establish a business in Cedar Hills or any other city, they've got to feel comfortable that they're going to be supported by the residents. And so other people have created an image of Cedar Hills in the past that I don't think is accurate, but still does not reflect well. And so branding accurately and doing it right, I think, can reap benefits for the city.
No, and I'm not arguing that point at all, because I think rebranding does have some very good benefits, but the costs associated with those benefits can be substantial. I don't know if we're ready to bear all those costs.
And you may not be. As a council, you may be saying, hey, this year we'll do the trucks. I mean, it'll cost us $25 a door, $30 or whatever our stickers cost. We'll do trucks this year. We'll do street signs over time. We'll do two main entrance signs in the city. You know, our logo's not, I don't think our logo's out there as expensive as what Provo's. I mean, I was in Provo yesterday and I saw three different signs. They had the Provo, you know, their new logo, Welcome Home, the old
remarketing that they did. Definitely, we're not at that level. But also, we don't have to bite it all off in one year either. And maybe Pro decided to do it, lock, stock, and barrel all at once. But again, that would be a decision that the council would make. You know, how do we tackle that part? But without knowing who we are or if we want to change the logo, back to your point, maybe the logo does stay the same. But maybe there's a tagline.
Okay, so I just have a couple of comments, and one of them goes back to actually the logo, because I mean that is a huge cost for us, and for me the logo is traditional to our city, and I can see that we need a tagline or we need a branding, but I don't foresee the logo being our issue. So it's almost like a mute point for me. Because I can take the logo out of it. What I'm really trying to grasp is that. So we're trying to get those in our commercial zone to feel good about coming to our commercial zone, and so we're identifying that we have a problem. I mean, I guess I just have these out there questions. Like, so we have a problem. So, but what is the problem? Is the problem that we have bad press on our city? Is the problem that people don't know where Cedar Hills is? And if they don't know where Cedar Hills is, who are we marketing to? So then I kind of feel like, okay, so we're branding our city to market to people that live where? Because if we want people to come to our commercial zone, just like Walmart does their study at the 3, 5, 8, 13 minutes out, so is that our demographic? Because if you look at people that live 3 minutes, they know where Walmart is. 5 minutes, they know where Walmart is. And so they know that, you know, when those commercial entities start coming in, I feel like they're going to know it's there. And part of it is on that business to advertise that they've opened, in essence. So I guess I'm just wondering, like, if we're wanting to get people to come to our city, because are we a destination city? And I can see that that's why maybe we need to identify who we are, but at the same time, if we're marketing because we're a destination city and we're not marketing locally, I'm confused. And so I feel like, is it a marketing standpoint or is it a public relations standpoint that we need to fix a problem within our city? So I don't know, because I don't have those answers.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
I think it's not about getting people from Alpine to come here and shop or at American Forum, Pleasant Grove, whatever. It's about the businesses to come to Cedar Hills and set up their business. So it's we create an environment whereby someone who perhaps has got a restaurant and they're looking to expand their restaurant. And you're right, it is their job to advertise, which they will do. But it's up to Cedar Hills to attract those businesses. So let's say that our image is of an affluent, educated, young family type city that likes to recreate. So let's just, for argument's sake, let's say that's what it is. Businesses would be attracted to that. That's what the branding is all about, is so we create this brand of what our city is from top to bottom in terms of what I think that the logo and tagline, those are just, they're not that important. It's from top to bottom is who we are as a city, what we communicate we are, what the residents think, what the commercial zone people think, what each stakeholder in our city thinks. And so I think you all got a report that I sent out a few months ago that dealt with branding, and it clearly says branding is not about logos and taglines. It's not. It's about an image that's created from top to bottom in terms of how I feel, how you feel, how all residents feel about Cedar Hills, and that's communicated in everything that we do. It's communicated through our PR. It's communicated through our advertising. It's communicated through our logos, those other things which are not important, but that's who we are as a city, and that's going to attract businesses to come to Cedar Hills. And if the businesses come to Cedar Hills to set up shop, that's when the residents from Alpine, Pleasant Grove, and American Forum, and all the other cities will come here to shop because we've got the right businesses. That's what it's about, in my opinion.
Well, I would add to that, too, that it's got to be scary. I mean, other than a Walmart and McDonald's, who, you know, regionally is what they're basing their profits on, not a store reservation of kind, but it's got to be a little bit concerning for a business who's going to come to Cedar Hills. If they're talking to people, people are saying, well, where's Cedar Hills? If you're just a, you know, a restaurant, that's got to be concerning, that you're going to open up somewhere where people don't even know where you're opening.
Yeah, but the way that I see this, I mean, going through this rebranding and spending $18,000 isn't getting us what you guys are talking about. That's getting us some of the steps that we've got to go through, but we still have to come up with staff time, we still have to come up with money to go through and do all of those steps. And that's what I'm worried about, because, I mean, we're being told right now that staff and, or, sorry.
But you can always outsource it.
Yeah, we can, but we've got to come up with the money to do that.
Yeah.
But I think
we already have the money, not budgeted, I assume. I mean, we have money budgeted for staff to do stuff, too. And I'm assuming that we have money budgeted for some of these activities. And, you know, we'll do some of them now and some of them next year. But I actually don't expect staff to do all the work.
No, I don't expect that they would do all the work, but I just don't know where we're going to get the funds, because a major marketing campaign like that, to get it out there to the commercial entities that we're trying to, that is a major effort. That is not a small task. And right now, council being told that we can't spend money, or that it's wrong to spend money to drive to St. George for training for the council, but yet we can go out and spend nearly $20,000
in order
to get the steps so that we can rebrand our city. I'm conflicted as to.
I don't think that's at all inconsistent.
Yeah, we're not saying we can't spend money to go to St. George because there's no money. It's we need to be. We are disagreeing on how we're targeting our money. We have the money, we can choose what we want to do with it. And maybe it would make more sense to do some of these marketing campaigns than to do other things, and we can make those trade-offs. But it's not that we just don't have the money.
We don't have the money, but what we're being told is that our funds are so tight, that we're under scrutiny for every dollar, that we may have to raise property taxes, and it goes on and on and on. And then we're being told, well, let's come up with another $20,000 to rebrand our city.
As mentioned, I don't think that's inconsistent. If we're trying to grow our city in terms of, we have money that's been allocated for advertising, which we're doing this year. We talked earlier in the evening about raising the awareness of the grill at the golf course and the Vista Room and all of the community recreation center assets. And so, branding is part of that, and I believe it will help, you know, raise the awareness and make those things successful. You have a really good point about where does that money come from, and that is a discussion that should take place. And so, we're in the budget season right now to figure out where that money comes from. And if this is a priority, if we believe that our city is going to be growing, particularly in the commercial zone area, and we do nothing to help that along, then I think we will not be doing our job. And so if we decide that this is a priority, then once that decision is made, then we've got to find in the budget places in order to allocate resources in order to make this happen.
So David, I have a question for you. So back when Conrad was our city manager, I sat on the Southside Development Committee, and they actually had a group come in, and they did that study that was, you know, the demographic, and it was like, I want to say it was like over $30,000 for that study.
I'm not sure on the number.
The vision study?
No.
It was a commercial zone layout, kind of a master plan, looking at their MGVNA.
Like that, but they actually pulled like statistics. This is the demographic from 3 minutes away, and this is what they will shop with. This is the demographic that's 5 minutes away, and this is what they're probably going to shop for. You know, these are businesses that we should go out and look to have come into our commercial district. And then also it talked about when you go to that 3, 5, 8 minute poll, what the income levels are too regarding it. And so for me, it's like that information, I mean, it's a seller. Because it was, the gentleman said, like, you guys have pretty fantastic numbers for where you're at. And so to sell the commercial zone, I feel like we already have that study done. And it was done, I swear I sat in the meeting like in August.
And I agree that and a lot of that information is still valid. You know, it could use an update. I'm sure it's been a couple years, and now 300 West is, you know, a 5-lane road, and different things have changed. Hopefully for the better, really.
Yeah.
And the economy has definitely picked up since then. I think that identified to a business the potential. It still addresses nothing to do with brand. It addresses nothing to do with who Cedar Hill is. It addresses nothing to do with what people say about us and where we're going as a city. You know, what people say about us.
So
it's nothing.
So.
But it is helpful. That information, I mean, if Cedar Hill had a specific brand, which would take a marketing plan on our part, somehow we would have to get that out there to promote ourselves. We're not doing that right now. Other people are thinking about Cedar Hill and you know, they think what they want. We're not being proactive in that area at all. And I think that's where this is helpful. When we have that done, plus we give them the demographics and we tell them, hey, look, within 3, 5, 8 minutes, there is this many housetops, here's the income level in this area. This is why it makes sense for you to bring your business to Cedar Hill. You know, it's more than just how far away people are from the commercial zone.
Part of the identity will attract the types of businesses that come in. One of the things that Ogden City did, they went through a huge rebranding exercise twice, and they tried to do high tech and they tried to get high tech people to come, and they failed at it. They had to brand again to do more of this recreation thing, which really did well, and they totally rebranded themselves, and they got a lot of businesses that were not what they expected at first, but once they got done, they got a lot. And I think that you know, we can try and guess what that is, and we can try to penny pinch on how we get there, but I think there's a lot at stake. We're talking about the grill and how are we going to get people to the grill and what should the grill be. That is part of the identity, and part of what we're going to get are these kind of sub-identities. So we'll have, you know, here's who Cedar Hills is, but we have a recreation center, we have an event center, and a golf course. There's three major sub-brands that I think this will address that will help us to figure that out. And not just what we think, but what a lot of people in the city think.
If I remember correctly, Mayor Godfrey, in talking about that, when they were first going out, they thought it was high-tech businesses. They did all that on their own. They didn't do actually any of these branding efforts. They thought internally that's what they should attract, and it didn't work.
You know, honestly, we are targeting our own residents also. We want our residents to buy into Cedar Hill. We want them to be involved and to shop here and to support our rec, to come join the classes, to come do all these things. Even our own residents don't even know what our identity and who we are. I think they're confused. I mean, we have a lot of people in our own community that don't even know this building is here, which just floors me, because we've had all kinds of open houses, we've had fights over what the building is, we've had all these things, and we've been here. Why don't they know we're here? You know.
Mayor G, with your permission, of course. I know that Mr. Irvin was here last time and has some input, and I'm just curious if he has any additional thoughts tonight.
You put me on the spot.
Well, he doesn't have to. I'm just saying if he would like to, with Mayor G's permission, if he has any input he'd like to give. I know he stuck around just for this particular agenda item.
Mr.
Irvin's input is always welcome.
No, I'll just reiterate some things that I said before, and you've said tonight as well. I think the logo is much less of an issue. It's not an issue. The issue is, what is Cedar Hills? And I'm going to take a little bit of issue with the mayor. And I think that the importance of this brand, it extends beyond the commercial zone, or the ability to attract people to make a commercial. I know people who live in this city that don't know they live in Cedar Hill. does that say? So my sense for the Seaboard, we've had that press for the last couple of years, and when I moved here 3 years ago, I told people where I lived, they laughed. And I was concerned about that. I made a bad decision. So I think this council has done a great job in helping to turn around that image. But my sense is that we can do a lot more with that image. Not only for the commercials on, but as well for people who live here. So that they can take some sense of pride in living in Cedar Hill. But when they say to someone, I live in Cedar Hill, they not only know where it is, off the Fort Canyon or whatever they choose to do, but they have a sense of pride of being here, that there's an identity associated with our city that makes people want to say, I live in Cedar Hill, and I feel great about it. Oh, they don't even brag about it. So, I have two cents. being on the spot, that's a good sense of that.
Thank you. for me, I agree that we need to probably look into branding our city. However, I feel like it's a pretty big decision for our city moving forward. I mean, it encompasses a lot of things of what we're doing, and I think we need to explore other options. Like, we need to explore. I know that you guys have two companies, but I think that it's important that in this decision that maybe the presentations are made to the council members, so that I guess maybe that decision is more unified, because I think it's a pretty big decision to, you know, move forward and rebrand our city and make those and do that vision. And I don't know, I just feel like I'm being just told where I don't know what took place in those presentations, and so I feel like I can't make a decision on it to move forward. I'm not saying that I don't think that we need it. I feel like we're limiting ourselves to the options. And I know that universities around here locally have marketing programs that rebrand cities or rebrand companies. And maybe that's something we can look into to lower our costs, because it's not in our budget right now. I need more.
I'm not sure I'm 100% in agreement with having a bunch of branding companies come and present to the council. I mean, we hire a lot of outside firms to do things, whether it's park maintenance, whether it's construction bids, and we don't require that every single one of them come present to the council. I think we have to have some faith in our staff that they have basically narrowed it down for us and are presenting to us the best option, which David and Chandler both
staff. Yeah, mowing grass to 3 inches is a lot different than rebranding our entire city.
Right, but the process is going to be the same, I think. With most,
how much should we spend on mowing grass?
That's a lot.
It's more than
we spend a lot of money. Not just this. So if you throw in marketing campaigns and stuff, we spend a lot of money on a lot of stuff, and we do put a lot of faith in our staff to recommend the best.
Yeah.
And I'll refer to this about this building. When the architects came in and gave us a presentation for their company, I will say that, there was a wide range of ones that we liked, ones that we didn't like, you know, in the middle. But when it came down to it, it was something that we all agreed upon, is that we felt this was the right company to go with. And for me, I don't have that information. I only am being told it's just this one company. And so for me, I would like to see more options. I would like to have, you know, options out there. So,
what's difficult on professional technical companies? I mean, Bowen and Combs, for instance, they didn't present to the council. We awarded them the same contract to come in and take a look at our entire rate structure for the water and sewer funds going from here forward. That was not a presented professional technical presentation to the whole council. You know, obviously, staff went and found companies that did that. We interviewed them. went through their process, made sure that they gave us the information, you know, told us their technical expertise. Technical and professional services typically, you know, and if the council wants to change that, if you want to see every single technical and professional presentation to the council, we can do that. We haven't in the past, but we can. I think the architect was more than hiring the architect. It was, what building are you building? Because those architects had much different ideas about what this building would be. And so it wasn't just hiring a guy who graduated from architecture school. It was a philosophy. It was, what are, where are you headed? That's why I think that you were presented with those proposals versus a professional technical proposal.
But take that and spin that around and apply that same logic to rebranding our city. This is probably the biggest effect that we will ever have on our city by doing something like this. So to have that dramatic of a change on our city, I think we do need to explore possibilities. We need to look at options and not just go, you know what, they presented a great plan, let's just run with it.
This right here is just selecting a company to walk us through that. We're not telling you what the plan is. We're not telling you what the brand will be.
Right, but we have to approve the money for the firm to go out and get all that information.
Right.
And if we're not comfortable with expending those funds for what that firm is going to give us, that's where I think the council needs to be involved, because I think we all need to be on board with that to make sure that we are getting exactly what the council wants so that we can affect the image of the city.
So what level of unsatisfaction are you with the deliverables that Radiate is saying that they're willing to give?
Well, looking at it, for me, in their contract, a big portion of it is the logo and designing the image of it. Do you guys have any idea what percentage or what part of that contract would actually be the logo and actually creating that idea for us?
Absolutely. That's a great question. And actually, in the proposal, the bulk of the work and man hours on our part is actually in the discovery phase. It isn't in the design. The design is one of the fastest phases of all the work. And many firms, actually, that's where they put their time. Okay, just tell us what you want, we will create a logo. But I think our philosophy is very different in that branding is not your logo. We're going to spend the bulk of our time in the discovery phase. And by the way, the deliverables in that phase are all, you own them, and the research that we conduct is going to go a lot farther than, you know, what your tagline, your logo, and your outreach plan might look like. I believe that in the work we've done with, you know, in something like this, as well as adjacent projects we've worked on, ultimately, what you learn from your community, what we see is our clients then launch other projects. Like, wow, we did not know that. Let's go do this other thing. We didn't know this. Let's go do that other thing. And most of the time, it doesn't involve us. But the short answer is, no, the logo is not the goal of the work.
Okay, so in your proposal, it says approximately 4 weeks for the design process.
That's right.
So to me, that indicates there's about a third of that contract amount that would be for the logo.
That's okay. So to be clear, 4 weeks is on our side designing, and we come back and we present, here are the options. We bring you options. Where the time comes is in the committee and in the feedback loop. So clients usually take a long time to come back to us, and that's what we're building in there. We hope, you know, we would love to do it much more quickly, but truthfully, you know, we're going to work with you until we get where, you know, where you're ready to move to the next phase.
So,
and that's the 4 weeks.
So are we knocking off $2,000 or $3,000 off the contract if we didn't have you do the work with them?
I'm not breaking it down by the actual design work is $1,000, and you know, it isn't broken down that way. we can look back to the proposal again and say, you know, if you wanted line item, item by item, it would be time consuming for me to go back and work with the staff to do that, but I'm willing to do that. I think for sure, professional development, any professional firm, the logo design is going to be the most expensive. I would say from our perspective, it's just one part of the whole process. And that's why I don't price it. We don't price a design, because who knows what that design is going to look like. Draw me a picture. It doesn't mean anything unless you know what you're doing it for. That answered your question. Anything else for me? Happy to answer questions.
I'm not actually ready to make a motion there.
Can I actually ask you another question before we get to the motion?
Sure.
On the audio from our last meeting, Jenny, I believe you said that you have some affiliation with this company. Can you tell me or explain what that affiliation is?
Sure. I used to work with Mary Kay in the past.
At this company or different company?
I worked with her at my office company, MediConnect, and then at Radiate. They had a medical client for a period of time, and that's kind of my background. I consulted with them so they could kind of get an idea of what their medical client's audience, who their audience was.
Do you see any conflict with this?
No, I don't make any money from Radiate at all.
But they're making a large amount of money off of us, right?
But I haven't had any conflict with them. I'm not making any profit off of it.
That's a recommendation.
Any further questions?
Yeah, I have a little concern about where the money's coming from. So we talked about $12,000 coming from our general PR budget, $4,000 coming from our golf event advertising, and given the amount of brand identity that we're going to get from for the events and golf and stuff versus just general Cedar Hills, I would like to see it more evenly matched at $8,000 apiece, or even having more done in the golf and event fund. We talk about economic development, and I agree it's a portion of it, and that's why I think there should be some in the 1040-330. But I think we're gonna get most of the bang in all the other identities that are specifically around the event, this building and the recreation and the events and the golf and the things like that. So I'd like to see it more proportioned accordingly.
Do we have 1,000 extra in the golf budget that we could pull from?
I would have to check with Charlotte and see where those account balances are. Definitely we can, I can work with the mayor or however the council would like to see that, and we can definitely return and figure out a different allocation. This was Charles, as he went through the budget, this was where he felt it was best to take these funds. But we definitely can allocate it,
yeah.
And I think you have some valid points.
Yeah, I want to make sure that we don't allocate it by what's available, but by how the benefits are distributed. Okay. Also, did this go through our legal review?
We did not. Eric did not look at the contract, but we can have a look at that.
Okay. I think we should do that before we approve it personally.
We think that's it.
Yeah.
So can I make a motion now?
Sure.
I motion that we approve a professional services contract with Radiate Creative for local and branding development in the amount of approximately $18,000 with legal review of the contract and approval by Eric Johnson, and also a look from Charlotte on if we can allocate more funds from the advertising golf and event fund and less from the general fund.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Any further discussion?
Yeah, I'd actually like to take that one. So I think it's really interesting that we talk about the cattery and we get tied up on like one little issue of amount of the litter, and we send it back to have staff look at it. But we have all of these reviews. We have no idea where that money is coming from. And we have all these stipulations. It still needs to be reviewed by legal counsel. And honestly, I'm surprised we're moving forward. I think there's still too many questions that need to be answered.
Thank you.
I have a discussion too. I'm disappointed in this. Like Stephanie said, I think we're rushing through this. I think Jenny's attachment to this company and them bringing in for $18,000 and pushing it through this quickly is wrong. And I think there are too many unanswered questions to approve this.
Okay. Thank you. Any further comments? All right, let's have a vote. Mr. Zappala?
Aye.
Mr. Augustus?
Nay.
Mrs. Martinez?
Nay.
Mr. Jackman?
Aye.
Mrs. Reese?
Aye.
Motion passes. Thank you very much. Okay, item number 12, discussion on creation of a social media policy. Mr. Goodwin?
Previous discussions on President Peter Hills on social media sites such as Twitter, such as Facebook, and the need to kind of bring those all in together. So what the staff's done is gone and looked at other cities that have social media policy. So the cities that we looked at were City of Fullerton, Iowa City, Iowa, Petaluma, California, and Seattle. And what we found was that they had the language in their social media policy was remarkably similar, almost verbatim in some cases. So what we did is we didn't want to reinvent the wheel on this one, but what we wanted to do is establish some policy that would allow for staff and council conduct on social media sites. So what you have in your packet is what we came up with, the language lifting from these particular cities and what their policies were. So if you have a chance to read that, I'd love to answer any questions you have on it.
I'm going to push back what you just said.
Yeah.
So you said you wanted to have a policy to allow more staff comments and feedback. So what are we doing? There's something we weren't doing that you're trying to trickle through this policy and make it better.
I don't want to say it's something that we weren't doing or were doing. I guess we wanted to see it kind of clear up anything that's vague with regard to how staff interacts with social media. We want, like for example, one of the things that we want to have when a staff member makes a comment on Facebook, we want to have them put their name and then position with the city, which is going to be upfront about that. We wanted to have general policies regarding comments on our Facebook pages. You know, something that is anything that was offensive or anything taken down and say, well, it was a violation of our policy. So we wanted to have something going forward that we could fall back on when we needed to act in regard to social media.
Right, so right now, when a member of the staff wants to participate in social media, is that clear from their supervisor? Is there a process?
This is not like I have a Twitter account. This isn't like me saying on my Twitter account, I am Peter Hills, I'm the assistant city manager. This is for city. This is for city accounts.
Yeah, I understand that. So, I mean, is that responsibility spread among lots of staff members, or is there a single person who's in charge of the official Facebook page and deciding when to put things up? Or?
Right now, the only two people that have access to the city Facebook page is myself and Mike, and I'm the only one who's putting stuff on it. But I think on the recreation page, all the instructors do, and
yeah, there's a recreation page, there's a golf page, there's a Twitter account. And I mean, there's other social media is always changing, and there's always new ways to communicate, to share ideas, to get the word out. So, serials, we wanted to feel like we're being proactive in a sense, and creating a policy that would kind of maybe guard us a little bit.
So, I think as people are coming and going, whether it's council or staff, you just want to have a flat policy in place for everything.
Yeah, and I mean, there's even other things that we could do. One of the things we looked at was Sandy actually had it's a form that you filled out before you were able to, as a staff member, to use social media. You went through the rules, you went through the policies, and you basically signed saying, I understand the policies, before even using, being allowed to use social media. So it's kind of protection for us. Because we talked a lot about, how do we get the number of our Facebook followers up, how do we get the number of our Twitter followers up. because that's how people communicate now. And if we're sending out the word to six people, we're not communicating effectively. So going forward, I think that there needs to be a real push towards the use of social media as we advertise for events, for things we can. But at the same time, we need to make sure that we're following some guidelines.
So I do have a question. In the policy, it's talked about how if there is anything that the city considers over offensive or abusive, et cetera, that we have the freedom to delete that. Yet from a ground perspective, if somebody grounds that, we have to be able to provide that record to them. So are we going to have a policy in place for when something is deleted from our social media sites, how that's going to be kept somewhere if it was ground requested?
Yeah, that's the other thing that I should address in this policy. Speaks to is the retention of records. Right now we don't have anything in our code that talks about retention of social media policy, where you're right, that is something for the public record. So this would be something that Colleen would need to go out and print up. I'm not really sure how you retain those records, if it's something we're going to look into a little more other than putting out for just saving. But you're right, we would need to save every comment before, even before it was deleted.
So I think it's a good idea to create some policies. I think that when we start to put out and get the city out on social media, we have to present a unified front, because anything official that shows up on any of those accounts are assumed to be from the city itself, not from individuals. So we need to be unified in how we present ourselves in these things. And so I actually appreciate these policies, because it will help to ensure that we do have that unified front, and that we are the things that we're posting is the things that that the city as a whole wants.
I
not
agree.
Just meetings.
Thank you. Are there any other comments? This is not a review action item, it's just a discussion item, and spend as much time as you want.
I'm just curious, has there been a ruling that social media is subject to grammar requests?
Yeah.
I'm sure of that.
Okay. If there are no other comments, are you wanting to speak?
Actually, yeah, I have a question. Because it kind of talks about social media, and I understand that, this is coming from the city standpoint. But what about when we have multiple council members posting on a forum?
That's actually...
that's that gray area.
I don't even know if it's a gray area. Correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I read through a PowerPoint that Eagle Mountain did on social media, and they were very adamant about council members not friending each other on Facebook and not commenting on Facebook or having discussions on the gray area. Basically, just because of the potential violation of open meeting laws. So that was kind of a... That was just what I read from... If you go from gray area to real quick, it can...
Yeah, but the thing with the blog is it's not hosted or maintained at all by the city. It's a private person's blog.
If it's a private person's blog, you're right.
And that's Jim Perry's forum.
The forum's right, but like on a Facebook thread. Let's say that the city posted on Facebook thread and all of you got on and started chiming in. I mean, that's where we get into some real...
And that's why I thought we had talked about it a long time ago, but maybe we didn't. I thought that we had decided on the city's Facebook page the council would not make comments to keep that from happening. On our own Facebook page, we can do whatever we want, but on the city's Facebook page, we as a council would never comment.
And even on personal Facebook pages, I would probably recommend to stay away from any topic of...
As long as it's not city-related.
Right, that's
social interaction.
I think that's the key. And putting that in a set of policies is not a bad idea, which is don't talk about city business on any of your personal social media things, as specifically elected officials, because that's where you can get in trouble. Right? If you avoid that, there's nothing anyone can do, because we're not breaking any laws. But as soon as you start talking about things that are going to come up or decisions that we're going to make, you're going to get in trouble real fast.
Okay.
Well, that's where Eric Johnson has actually discussed this from a legal point of view. And even a private email address. If you use that to do city business, you are now subject to grammar. We've gone through this.
That's right.
If you have a blog or a forum or anything, and as a council, you start all chiming in doing city business, that then becomes a city record.
And it's not just a grammar problem, but it's an Open Meetings Act problem.
Well, that's what, seriously, I have the hardest time posting on the forum, because if somebody posts, one of the council member posts, and then when somebody else posts, it's like, well, it's off limits to me now,
you
know,
because
I don't want to be the third person in this discussion.
Same thing with
emails. And I know that Jim Perry, you know, is the one that has the aboutcedarhills.org. However, it's about Cedar Hill. I mean, it's a forum about our city, talking about city business, and when, you know...
Long term, it's going to somehow end up outside of his hands, but it's still going to be about Cedar Hills.
I don't know.
Of course it's you.
So, and maybe we need to have Eric Johnson come and, in conjunction with this policy, make sure that we're all clear on exactly how it affects, you know, different media, whether that's a forum or a blog or a Facebook account, whatever. He needs to chime in on this.
And when we talk about how we guide future councils and future city employees, I think these policies will be very important. And so I would love to have his input, not just on the technicalities of the law, but review these policies and just make sure that his opinion is, by following all these guidelines, we're going to keep ourselves out of trouble.
Isn't there supposed to be a yearly open meeting?
Yes.
I mean, that would be a great time to go over these.
Typically, we've had it at the St. George training. No, I'm serious. Because David
really
Church does that every year there. So we may, I think this is a good opportunity to, A, have that training here, and B, talk about these things, because they are really important.
And I would like to make it more specific to our concerns.
Absolutely.
I think it would be great if Eric can address these policies.
And we happen to have somebody who knows David Church really well.
Well, the other thing I would like to just talk about on the social media standpoint is that, you know, currently right now, Jenny is our communications officer, and so she's the one that posts on our site and stuff like that. But I think as a whole, when we're talking about council members and what that message is that goes out, that I think sometimes it's really hard when you feel blindsided in a post, or you didn't know about something, or that message isn't like what you thought the message was. And so I know that sometimes we all want, I know I'm it's not like freedom of speech in essence, but at the same time that message is going out wrong.
So right now when I'm posting to Facebook, it's never my opinion, it's always something important from the website, or I'm getting directly from a department.
Yeah.
So VE is the weekly public works message,
yeah,
and I just copy that. Or I post about the newsletter, or I post off of the website that Mike already put up there. So it's never my opinion, it's coming from staff directly.
And I think it's great. I think where my bigger concern is when we're talking about those other social media sites like the forum, and we're speaking as council members, and it sounds like it's coming from the council itself. And I think all of us have been in that position where we've spoken as if we're speaking for the council, and I think that's really hard when somebody else might disagree with it.
I think that there's a point to be made there that maybe we can. I don't post anymore on the forum, but I think that we can do a better job as a council in terms of making clear that the opinion being stated represents that individual as opposed to the council. I think that's true. I like the transparency, though, that I think our city has right now, and I think the residents do as well. Transparency is a good thing. And so, and council doesn't always have to agree on the policy. I like it that the council doesn't always agree sometimes. I remember one time when I was on council and I voted, and I was the only person who voted something, and I felt like the lone person. But you know, sometimes you have to do that. Sometimes you have to, you know, vote what your conscience is, but not hold it against the other council members, because democracy, you know, can look like sausage going through a sausage machine. It's not always pretty, but it works. And so, you know, I know there were some disagreements tonight, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. That's what democracy is about. I appreciate that. So.
Go ahead.
I just wonder if we're going too far with respect to the Meetings Act and online communications. Because it specifies that you have to have more than two members present, right, for it to constitute a meeting. And it doesn't include chance social encounters. So, for example, with respect to the forum about CityHills.org, it states right at the bottom who is currently logged on. So I feel like if I can go there and I see there are not two other council members currently logged on in comments at the same time, that is not me with more than two of their presence.
It's fuzzy, and even the legislature has talked about how it's fuzzy. Examples of that are emails. When I send an email, you're not around, but you're getting it, you're seeing it. And it's true, I think, that today it's not a big deal, but in the future it may be. This is a very fuzzy area that, like I said, if we had Eric look at it, Eric says maybe we're going too far, and we should definitely review it on a periodic basis, because this is a part of the Open Meetings Act that's going to be changing in the next 5-10 years.
I would even think in the next 2 years.
Well, I mean, just like consistently. Yeah. Year after year, for the next 5 to 10 plus years, I think you're going to see bits and pieces of Open Meetings Act change in order to deal with things like emails and texting and things like that, because weird stuff happens. And they're trying to keep everyone honest in this part of that process.
Yeah, my point is that rather than us sitting here assuming that it does apply to things like the forum, and that we have to now steer clear of it, when I've done it for 6 years, that we ought to start having some training about that.
I think that getting Eric Johnson to come in and give us some input, we're looking at ways that providing council with the required training they need in open meeting laws. And in order to fulfill that, but having Eric come and talk to us specifically about the forum and involvement that's there is probably time well spent. I think that's a good idea.
Well, on Facebook and Twitter, all of social media, definitely. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else, ladies and gentlemen?
Good discussion.
It was a good session. Thank you. I'm not aware of any. Yeah. Oh, there is. Apparently we're going into executive session, and so...
For legal or...?
Personal conduct. So...
Do you want to make that one?
Yes, I'm trying to find it.
Okay. It's 42-4-205. Yeah. Okay, I'll motion that we go into executive session pursuant to Utah Code 52-4-204 and 52-4-205.
For what reason?
For personal competency and possible pending litigation.
Second. There a second? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Second. No, we need to exit.
We have to exit executive session.
What is the location? What's that? Location.
Tweet. Are you up?
Adjourn the whole meeting.
I agree with adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
We're done.